LinkedIn News.
Hi, I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Welcome to This Is Working, the podcast, where my colleague Nina Melendez and I discuss a conversation I had on my video series, This Is Working. Nina and I take that conversation, we dissect it, and we extract our top takeaways for you, the listener. Today, we're talking about resilience and the importance of it. We are going to discuss the idea of hiring for potential, and then we're going to round it off with a discussion about networking and what it really means within a big company and why it's so important. We're going to get into all of that after the break.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
And we're back. Nina is here now. Hey, Nina.
Dan.
Hey.
It is cold outside.
It is cold outside.
It is real. It's like bitter cold in New York these days.
And I feel like I might be wrong here, but are you getting sick?
Do I look sick? No, I'm not.
I see some throat clearing and some chest bumping. I don't know whether
that is. I hope not. Yeah. Well, the chest bumping was to get energized.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. You know, this winter, I have been doing a really good job, actually, of eating a lot of oranges.
Okay.
And taking vitamins almost religiously.
Wow.
Yeah. Because remember, I'm running the half marathon.
Yes, of course.
And I didn't want to get to a place where I was like not able to train.
For me, I'm not a believer in vitamins. I don't think the vitamin C thing works. I've tried that in the past, but sleep is really important
for me.
And I am not. I'm totally failing
on this. No.
But I really was like, I'm going to start going to bed on time. Uh-huh. And then it's like, last night it was 1 a.m. I'm like, what am I doing? This is so dumb. And so now I know I'm going
to
get sick.
And then do you have to wake up really early?
Of course. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Heavens.
It's bad.
Yeah. So this actually, I was thinking about this in regards to who you spoke to recently, because she is all about preparedness and readiness and getting ahead of the curve when bad things hit.
That's right. So this is Belén Garijo. She is the CEO and chair of the executive board of Merck KGaA.
Yeah.
Merck is this ancient German company. It's been around for over 350 years. It covers three areas: healthcare, life sciences, and electronics. Belén came out of the healthcare division and became the president and CEO of that division in 2015, and then 2 years ago became the CEO of Merck in total. Merck's a family-owned company. It's on the 13th generation. What Belén is really focused on is this idea of resilience.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure that you have a company that continues one generation after the next, which means really preparing for the future?
Yeah, she has a career. She started her career as a physician in a hospital in Madrid. So I'm really curious if this really informed her passion for resilience. And when she talks about resilience, she talks about it. By the way, I think she would be so proud of me with all of my vitamins.
Absolutely.
And my preparedness
so
for the flu.
So disappointed in me.
But when she talks about resilience, she really talks about it in terms of being ready for the worst and getting ahead of the black swans that may come her way for the company. Let's hear what she had to say about that.
People expect that when everything goes well, you sit and relax. And when I am asked what is the biggest risk for a successful organization, I always say complacency, right? And in a way, what I imply with that thinking is that when you are sitting on a very successful company that is growing, delivering on the short-term expectations, you have to have the courage to actually look longer term, right? And say, okay, you know, what is what I have to do, right, to take the company to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter that you are not sitting on a burning platform. Everybody understands that when you are sitting in a burning platform, you have to change.
Right.
But actually transforming organization to increase resilience, right, to be ahead of the curve, requires much more tremendous volatility, disruption, and all the consequences of the pandemic. I just wanted to see, okay, where are we today? Right?
Right.
Are we ready
The way that Belen talks about resilience, I think, is a little bit different than most of us talk about resilience. I think we have so trained ourselves to think about resilience as making sure that computer systems have backups and being prepared if there is a fire in your workplace. But she's really talking about something bigger. She is talking about being ready for whatever the world is going to throw your way.
How do you build a company that can do that? Because it's like looking into a crystal ball in a way. And when you're so involved in the day-to-day, when you're dealing with today's problems or even tomorrow's problems, how do you deal with the problems a year from now, 2 years from now?
I think that a lot of it comes from making sure that you have opinionated beliefs about where the world is going and that you have plans in place to take advantage of that. What it really means is having a workforce that's capable of navigating those changes. And I think that if you have a workforce that can tell you that the world is changing, we need to change what we're doing, and then can make those changes, you're in good shape. If you have people who are saying, I'm clocking in, I'm clocking out, this is what I've been told to do, this is in my job description, I'm not doing something outside of my job description, you do not have a resilient organization.
It's also, I think, in how much work people are doing day to day. So if you've got people who are constantly on the verge of burning out, they're never going to have the capacity to look ahead or to have opinionated beliefs on what's going to come up next.
Yeah, that's a great point. So you need to have an organization where people are encouraged to talk about what's coming down the road, where they have time to be able to think about strategy, to pay attention.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, we had a conversation recently with John Haber, the CEO of Giant Spoon, who encourages his company to get out of the office as much as possible, to go experience the world. So in his case, he wants creative people. He's like, go to an opera, go to a wrestling event, go to do anything that you can connect dots in the world. But it's the same idea of get out and see what's coming or see what else is happening so that you have a better informed picture versus thinking about just what's on your to-do list and getting it done.
You know, Bain & Company, they do the same. When I worked there, they would pay for you to go to museums and they would have days where it's like go out and experience the world a little bit and see what's happening around specifically for that.
I think it's really smart. I just did a in-person meeting recently with a leading voice on LinkedIn. We sat down, went to his office, sat down and talked to him, and he saw the world in a very different way than I had been looking at it. And that meeting was an unstructured hour of just a conversation about where things are going. And it changed some of my plans based on that. And I think there is so much to that idea of making sure that you have that time to go have those conversations because you need those extra inputs. I think that's part of making sure you have a resilient organization. It really does mean hiring people who absolutely are committed to seeing around corners. It doesn't mean they can see around corners, but it means that they always want to know what's coming and they want to be the person who leads that change. So this idea, and Belen says she's changed how she hires and she now only hires for potential. So let's hear how Belen Garijo hires.
You have to follow your intuition, right? But you cannot let yourselves be driven by impressions. So, you know, many, many years ago, I gave this myself as a development goal. I said, look, you have the percentage of errors when recruiting, which is a bit higher than you should, right? I mean, the more senior you are in the organization, the most critical positions you hire, right? So going above and beyond impression was my first objective, right? So I started to very humbly ask for a peer review of candidates. And even assessment. So recruiting is super difficult because, you know, we learn to sell ourselves in front of others. And you have, when you are recruiting, you have to not only look at the track record, but once again, look at, okay, this person is capable of delivering in this job. Is this person going to be able to grow? And what would be the next step and how he or she are going to be integrated into the into this organization. So looking beyond the conversation is very important. I have moved from hiring exclusively on experience to hiring on potential. And when I say hiring, I also, in a way, speak about our internal development because we follow, I mean, we have, obviously, we put a lot of emphasis on talent acquisitions, of new skills and all this, but one of the important elements to keep our people engaged is actually making sure they see they have the opportunity to grow and thrive in the organization. So this is applicable to both.
I entirely agree with Belen's philosophy here on hiring for potential. And I have noticed that everyone that I have been involved in hiring who I hired for potential has always exceeded expectations. And I will look at that over just pure qualifications. It's like, so for example, there was someone who had the list of, you know, they had worked at all these places and they had such a great list and they were, you know, fine, great in the interview. And then there was another person who you could just see was hungry and didn't have as much experience, but loved the industry and was trying to get more experience in the industry. And I knew that that person was never going to be bored, that that person was always going to try to do their best and exceed and go the extra mile. Whereas the other person, I was worried, like, that they are, you know, they would do a great job, but would they be passionate about it the way that the other person was? It hasn't been a million times that this has happened, but the few times it has happened, I have not been disappointed.
Do you have a question you ask to be able to assess potential?
Good question. Not to assess potential, but you know, I do have an interview question that I always ask.
Oh, let's hear.
Which is, would you rather have a coworker on the axis, right? You've got a Y and X axis, and they are incredibly proficient and very good at what they do, but they rank super low on likability. Like, they're horrible to work with.
Got it.
Versus having someone who's really, really nice and really likable and really great to work with, but not as strong in their day-to-day. Which person, if you had to pick one, would you rather work with?
Why is that? What are you trying to get out of that question?
I'm just trying to understand their philosophy on work and colleagues and culture.
Got it.
And we don't have to include this, but I love that question because I learned so much about the person when interviewing.
Huh. All right. Belen talks about the idea of people coming into interviews being so prepared that it's almost not even worth it.
Yeah.
You look at their resumes, their profiles are perfect. They've prepared for every interview question. They know their anecdotes cold. And so this idea of how do you figure out, if you're a leader, if you're a hiring manager, how do you know whether someone is going to have that potential? I think it's a really tough, I don't have the answer for it. I think it is really tough. But if I think back to who I've hired that have shown that kind of potential, I don't know if I could tease it out. I'm not sure that I know how to be able to spot potential. I agree with you. There's a lot of it that is in the energy. When they come in and they show that they really are hungry for the job, and they seem to understand what success looks like for the team. So I think that, let me give you an example of when I started at LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I sat down with our now current CEO, Ryan Roslansky. I was put in a room. The way that LinkedIn hired back then was I thought I had a job, and then they were like, actually, you need to come in and sit in this room all day, and various people are going to drop in and ask you questions. And I actually don't remember any of them except for Ryan.
Hmm.
So Ryan Roslansky, CEO of LinkedIn, at that point he was a product manager, came in and asked me, my memory of it is two questions. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what the first one was. Mm-hmm. But the second one said, how do you know if we're going to be successful with our content operations? And I said, well, I think people are going to come back every day. We'll know if we're successful if someone comes back to LinkedIn every day for more. And he said, yep, I agree. And he left. And I think that idea of what he was trying to get at was, we didn't know if what we were building was right,
mm-hmm.
but we knew where we wanted to go eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is how you find out if someone has potential, is can they help think about where you need to be in 3 years versus what you need to get done the next day? So they have to be able to do what needs to get done the next day, but they have to know, they have to have a firm opinion about where the company or the project or the organization has to be in a few years.
Did you know as a candidate where you wanted the company to be in a few years when you were
100%.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew exactly where I wanted I didn't know if the company agreed with me, but I knew exactly where I wanted it to go.
Interesting.
I didn't have a response to Ryan pre-formulated. That was in response to his question. I just earnestly believed it,
mm-hmm.
and I still believe it.
Yeah.
But I think that was that's one of the questions that I now bring up to people all the time when I interview them is, how do you know this is going to work?
Mm.
And that's a good sign. If they just tell me, we'll see, you know, page views will move up, or we'll be able to move this metric by, you know, 10% or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's someone who is thinking small and isn't thinking about where we could go. I want to see those big picture ideas, and I want to have them have a clear understanding mm-hmm. of if they look back, were we reaching our potential?
Mm. How do you hire to make sure that you have a team of people who aren't going to be disappointed if they don't meet those goals?
This goes back to the resilience question.
Yeah.
How do you make sure that people are...
They can fall down and get back up.
Yeah. Like, I think that that's where the question comes in. I love those interview questions like, have you ever failed at something? Tell me about a project that didn't work. Those kind of questions where you can see how people have this growth mindset and what they've done in problems, what they've learned from problems. You want to make sure that you're hiring people who really feel like everything is an opportunity to learn. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on my conversation with Belén Garijo.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
And we're back.
So we were just talking about how to hire for potential and for resilience. But once you're in the company, how do you make sure that your potential is seen amongst your colleagues? And for Belén, she says it's about raising your hand, but also it's about networking. And not just networking up so that your bosses know all the great work you're doing, but networking laterally. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
Dedicate a lot of time to perform. Which is great, you know, this is exactly what I have done, right? So you say, okay, you know, if I deliver, if I achieve, I will be seen, I will be visible, you know, I will
look
have
at my
the
results.
Chances,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Look at my results. But, you know, networking is key to succeed in a complex organization, right? And networking in the right way, not showing off. Networking is very different from showing off, mm-hmm. right? And mainly to female leaders, I really give them 2 points to reflect, because that's exactly what I believe is my job, helping them reflect on, okay, how do they go there? And then obviously mentoring them. One is networking, right? It's important. Second, raise your hand. There is nothing wrong with raising your hand, because in an organization which is trust and truth-based, we need to have the courage to be transparent to our people and tell them where they are. Because not everybody can get to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that. But they also have the right to know. So those are basically some of the ideas. But the most important is there is not a single path to the top written in stone. You have to look for your own path.
Right.
Right? And the path is frequently not an escalation. But it's a combination of a lot of hard working, sacrifices, and why not, you know, lateral moves, different positions.
This really made me think about Joaquin Duato, the CEO of J&J, because he had several lateral moves before he became the CEO. And he was someone who religiously said yes to the opportunities that came his way. And obviously, I mean, it worked for him. He's been at J&J for over 30 years and, like I said, now the CEO.
Yeah, this idea of building community. When Belén talks about networking, what she really means is building community and building reputation. She uses the word networking in a way that I think is different than most people think about it. It is about being on teams with other people at your level, lower levels, maybe slightly above your level. It's about building up your reputation within the company, and it's about being known as a person who gets things done and is great to work with. And she said, you can come and network with me if you want. You can tell me how great you're doing, but it doesn't really matter. And I think people think, oh, well, she's the CEO. Of course you want her to know how great you are. But she's got a million things going on in her plate. She's not looking out for your career. The other people who are going to look out for your career are the ones who are working alongside you.
Yeah.
And they're going to move up. They're going to move into different parts of an organization. They're going to say, we need to have Nina on our team.
Yeah.
And then as you move up, in the case of Joaquin's a great example of this, where as you move around, you get better known and more people become your allies and your advocates. That's a great thing to have within a company. So I love this idea of networking as community building. Very smart.
So what happens if you're someone who's really bad at being extroverted or friendly at work? Not friendly. Friendly's not the right word. extroverted yeah. and, you know, schmoozy or whatnot.
I think the word network, we should just stop. I think as a society, we should stop
okay.
using the word networking.
Okay.
It's become so weighed down by negative connotations. Because when you think about networking, it's exactly that. The extrovert comes into the party with a little hello, my name is tag
right.
and chats up everybody.
And they shake your hand.
Shake your hand.
And they're very,
handshake.
Right, right.
They remember your name.
Right.
What she's saying is somebody who's a great teammate. Someone who makes other people's projects better. You don't have to be extroverted to do that. You have to be extremely competent and great to work with and driven and giving. If you're somebody that can make someone else's project go better, you have just done the ultimate networking. They now know that you're somebody who is on their side, they want to have on their team going forward. That is a great way to network.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this part that she mentioned about always raising your hand. Is that a good thing if you have a team that is always raising their hand? Does it mean that they are not challenged enough? And could it potentially disrupt things if every time there is an opportunity, they just wanted to raise their hand? Does it sound like they want to leave the team? Or is it a good or a bad thing?
I can only tell you how I look at it as a manager. I think if there are people who are just raising their hand saying, I want something else, it's a pretty clear sign they're unhappy in their job. But if it is about running something that they're passionate about or moving up and challenging themselves in a new area, and they can make the case for why they should do it, even if they're not going to get the job, I love seeing that. It is a sign of ambition and of a desire to be bigger or to do things that are bigger than what they are doing currently.
And potential.
It's all about potential.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is that raising your hand is showing real potential. And so it tells me every time someone does it on my team, it tells me that this is a person who is eager and ready for more. And so what I don't know is how do they handle the rejection? Because I can think of certain people who have raised their hand a couple of times and have not gotten the position they were asking for. In my mind, I'm like, it's awesome. I love that they keep raising their hand. These two have not been the right one. But at some point, we're going to find this a better and bigger position for this person.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't know how you deal with that kind of setback. And you have to know that even though you raise your hand, you're not always going to get called on.
Yeah, I think it's in how the manager talks to that person. Hey, I know you raised your hand for this thing. You're not going to get it, but keep raising your hand. Keep doing it. And here's why you're not getting it. It's not, has, you know,
yeah.
X, Y, Z reason, factors that maybe you're not aware of. But the encouragement of like, keep doing it because it will land. And I am noticing that you are raising your hand, that you are putting yourself forward.
Totally. And I can think of the converse also where I've encouraged people to raise their hands for positions and they've said no. And that goes in exactly the opposite direction.
Oh, for sure.
Where I've been like, I'm telling you, you should put your hat in the ring for this.
Yeah.
This is the bet we're making. I'd love to see you try out for this role.
But I think that's crazy that someone would say no. If there's a specific reason, like with daycare, I can't take on this new project.
Very different.
But just to not be interested in trying something new, to me, that'd be a huge demerit.
Yeah.
So I know this isn't the resilience that Belen was talking about, but I think that it is, I don't know how you hire for this, but maybe just personally in life, just this idea of being able to be resilient. Because you're not always going to get the thing you raise your hand for. You're not always going to get called. You're not always going to get the job or the opportunity, whatever. And it's how do you build resilience within yourself so that when you do get the rejection, it is not so devastating. I find that to be something that I have to work on constantly. You know, to not get discouraged. If someone tells you no, to not be like, my life is over, you know, but to just be like, all right, back up, back in the ring.
Yeah. I think if you don't have it, you are not going to do well in any business or any field. Coach K. Duke would talk about this idea of next play. And something happened, you missed the shot, next play. What's next? I think that's how you have to live your life.
Yeah, and not just moving on, but keep trying.
Absolutely. You have to keep trying and you can't have rejection or failure. It can slow you down, but as quick as possible, you got to get back up.
Does it make sense for people who don't get the opportunity, who raise their hand, don't get the opportunity, does it make sense for them to then talk to the person and be like, hey, I'd love to know what I can do better for next time?
Absolutely. And I think that taking this back to Belen's point about networking, you have more chances of getting tapped for projects if more people know you. And if you have proven yourself in more arenas. So that's the other part is you don't have to just rely on one manager.
Yeah.
This idea of knowing everybody within the company, of working on a bunch of different things, you're increasing the likelihood that you are going to be a candidate for some project you never thought about before or you never thought you were capable of. Someone's going to see that in you and tap you for it, and then that's a chance for you to go and go in a different direction. I would love to hear from you. How are you, and I'm not going to use the word networking here, how are you building connections within your company? What do you do to make sure that you are part of other people's projects, that you're helping other people be successful beyond just your day-to-day? What has worked for you to make sure that you are meeting other people within the company, that you're being well-known outside of your own individual area? Let me know on LinkedIn using the hashtag ThisIsWorking. You might hear your contribution on an upcoming episode.
Please share this podcast episode with a friend and review it. It helps new listeners find us. If you'd like to hear the full conversation between Dan and Belen, check the show notes. We'll link to it there. This Is Working is a LinkedIn editorial production. Our production team includes Sarah Storm, Stephen Valdivia, Asaf Gidron, Taisha Henry, Andres Cordona, and Max Miller. Joe DiGiorgi mixes our show. Enrique Montalvo is our executive producer. Dave Pond is head of news production. Our head of original programming is Courtney Coop. I'm Nina Melendez, senior producer.
And I'm Dan Roth, LinkedIn's editor-in-chief. Be well and stay curious.